WNRN.
This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you, everybody, for being here with us today. One of my favorite shows. I always love doing this show. We're going to be talking about books. We're going to talk about reading. Originally, I think the first time I wanted to do this, I labeled it as something like summer reading. And then at some point with the guests, we determined that, you know, that's like summer movies. And sometimes you need something a little more in-depth. And so it's not just for summertime reading, although with some of the lame stuff I read, maybe that's how it comes across. But the guests and the in-depth, intelligent literature will have descriptions and suggestions of all types, as well as comments about reading. I want to know how you get a young child who may not be interested to read. I want to talk about literary snobs. Do you need a handheld book? Do you need a, you know, are digital books okay now? So let's fire up the proper buttons and introduce our guests. Over by the door, Sandy McAdams. Good morning, Sandy.
Good morning, Rick, and I hope it's a happy morning for you.
Sandy, when I have such wonderful people to spend the hour with, they're all incredible mornings.
Stop it.
Sandy is the owner of Daedalus Bookshop, bookstore. I always remember Bookshop on the downtown mall or just off the mall, the corner of Market Street and 4th. One of the most amazing stores you'll ever go in, looking for used books. We'll talk about that as we go through the hour. Also with us today, Lindsay Idison. She's the branch manager of the Northside branch for the Jefferson Madison Regional Library System. Good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
And over tucked in the corner, so she won't escape, Meredith Dickens. She's the new title. In the past, when you were on, it was the Gordon Avenue Library Manager. Now, moving up the system, the Collections Manager for the Jefferson Madison Regional Library System.
That's right. Good morning, Mike. Right.
So I have to ask you, I know what a bookshop owner does, although maybe not in enough detail. A library manager, the specific for that department, for that building, mm-hmm. collections manager?
Yeah, well, the collections are everything that the library has on offer. It can be the books, the music, the DVDs, and all of our electronic resources. And I manage all of that. We decide what to purchase, what to have available, and how best to make it available to the patrons.
So you don't just buy. How many buildings are there? How many specific libraries are there in JMLR?
We have 8 branches and the bookmobile.
So you don't just buy 9 versions of the one book and send one to everybody.
Right, no. Each branch has its own character. It also has its own size. So not every branch can have every book because they wouldn't fit. But we decide which community can best, you know, has a readership for a specific topic or a trend, send those, make sure that those books are there for what they can hold. And then also we have larger branches like Northside and Central where we can have almost everything, and Central, so we can always send those books to the smaller branches. When you place a hold, it just takes a day or two to get to wherever you want to pick it up.
So a little more difficult than I would make the job by just buying a big stash and sending one to everybody.
Yeah, and I always have to remember, just because I want to read a book, I want to buy, you know, I want to buy all the copies of the books I want to read. I want to make sure that I get the books that fit the diverse community that we have.
And I should tell everybody, you become good friends with Meredith. She brought me a book today to read and said, hey, here you go. We had to make sure that it was a good book. She was not just give away
I brought
garbage
a few
literature.
It's good.
This is 91.9 and Harrisonburg's 95.1. Our guests today, Sandy McAdams from Daedalus Bookshop, Lindsay Idison and Meredith Dickens from the Jefferson Madison Regional Library. So let's jump right in. What are you reading now? Ladies first, Lindsay.
I just finished the newest mystery by Charlaine Harris, who's famous for writing the Sookie Stackhouse series that was made into the TV show True Blood. And she has finished off that series and started a new one, and it's called Midnight Crossing. And I thought it was pretty good. I think people who like her will enjoy the new series.
Meredith?
I just finished reading a good one. It was by a local author, Jen Swan Downey. It's called Ninja Librarians, and it's for younger readers. It's sort of Lightning Thief meets Mr. Limoncello's Library, if you're familiar with those two. Some kids get drawn into another world, and in this case, it's a secret library world. There's lots of adventure, a bit of magic, action, humor. It was fun. I think it'd be fun for a family to read together.
Now, when you're reading these books, a new book, and this is a new book.
Yep.
Are you reading this because out of personal interest or because you need to check it out to make sure it's good for the library system?
Sure. That's a little of both. I think we all have to balance what, as I said, what I want to read with what I want to be up on, you know, the latest trends in genres I might not normally read. So I try and alternate. This one's for me, this one's for my knowledge base.
Rick, at my branch, all of the reference desk staff have to read 30 children's and young adult novels a year in order to be able to do reader's advisory. So
and that's
they
because
have to read them.
Northside is, am I wrong to say, one of the largest family sort of attended and kids book libraries in the system?
Yes, that's correct. We do a lot of reader's advisory for all ages, but particularly for children and teens.
And I'm going to want to talk more about how that works. Sandy McAdams, owner of Daedalus Bookshop in the downtown Charlottesville area. What are you reading?
I'm reading a John le Carré novel, probably for the third time, called Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. And the reason I'm doing this, a couple of years ago, some of my very oldest friends, men I consider brothers that I've known for 40 years, Philip Stafford, John Conover, and sadly no longer David Simpson. They asked me to start a book club, but their idea was that I should pick all the books. So currently we're doing British mysteries, and we started with a wonderful book called Raffles, Gentleman Thief. It's written around 1890. And now we're not quite up to a le Carré book, but I'm reading a little bit ahead. Most of the books I've read that are on the list. So this is wonderful for me because I think I realized what it makes them so special for me. There's something about British writers, whether it's Lawrence Durrell or John le Carré, that allows me to just to sink into that luscious prose that they write. And they do it, and I'm just carried away. And once again, I congratulate the Kingdom of Britain and Ireland and Scotland for doing these beautiful books.
So I have to ask you, Sandy, are you a literary snob?
The reverse.
You would read anything. If somebody said, you know what, I didn't really like this, or you go everywhere and you look, you know, whatever book site that you want to look at, and it gets a poor, you know, 1.5 stars. Are you going to read that anyway if it has your interest?
Absolutely. I think it's completely wrong to say that a book is good or bad, because what you're really saying is the book didn't appeal to me. And to make a judgment about good or bad, I don't understand what that means. It means you didn't like it? In fact, that's fine, but I might like it. So I might call it a good book, but I think you have to do it according to what appeals to you. And I think Stephen King is a pretty luscious writer. Many people would not agree, but Stephen King has formed many, many young adults' literary opinions because he's so good at it.
So how do you determine what kind of book to pick off the shelf? Lindsay, Meredith, I mean, are we talking about, you know, by this writer's name and some sort of association with someone else that, oh, I would probably like this. Are you sticking with the same genre that you might be into at that moment? Is it the title? Is it the cover? You know, what draws you in to pick something that you want to do next?
I think probably a little bit of everything that you just said. Either there is a touchstone that you know, an author, or a subject that you're interested in, Or it's sort of like choosing what to eat. It's what are you in the mood for? Sometimes you're in the mood for rich chocolate cake, and sometimes you really want a nice crisp green salad, and you just have to pick the book that fits what you're in the mood for then.
And Lindsay, how about for you? I mean, do you agree with that? And certainly, no, Meredith is wrong. But is there a part of that that grabs you first?
I do agree with Meredith. I am kind of a plot slut. So if I read the flap of a book and it sounds like a great plot, then I'm there. I think that because I get to see all the new books that are purchased for Northside and I get to look at them briefly before we put them out on the new shelf, right then I decide which ones I'm going to put holds on. But a lot of times our patrons are ahead of me. When I go to put a hold on it, there are already 15 people on hold for it. So I have to get on the waiting list too.
And Sandy, as somebody who sees all these books, because again, a used bookshop, so people are bringing you books to purchase, and then you have 100,000, 150,000. I always see the numbers different depending on the story I'm reading about Daedalus. How many are in the bookshop?
I would say now 500,000, because we have enormous, enormous piles of boxes coming in. And I just had 98 boxes brought to my house. So it's just overwhelming. But generally 100,000 is the figure. But there have been such an influx of books, I think, from people my age dying or people giving up cloth books, paper books. So they're coming in for the last year or two like an avalanche.
So how do you pick what you want to read out of that? Is it just, I haven't read that before, so I'm going to read it now?
I think it's very hard for me to say. Number one is having a bookshop. If you think it's like having a restaurant, where you think if I have a restaurant and bar, I can sit at the bar and smoke and have beers.
Yeah, right. I know better than that.
Yeah, you're in for a shock. Well, it's the same with the bookshop. I've never read a complete book in 40 years at Daedalus. What you're doing is buying and pricing. So I think the other thing is, when I turned 60, I said to myself, I think I have enough facts. And even when a book will appeal to me, like the rat population of New York City, just oddball stuff like that, I won't read it because I'm just going to read novels from now on. I think I have enough facts, but I would like some more wisdom. And I think novels can provide that.
Yeah, to go with the restaurant concept, I've worked in a restaurant and food service for years, and I can't remember the last time I ate a warm meal.
Exactly.
I mean, when it's time, and then something calls you away, you never get to experience what other people assume that you're experiencing.
Right.
So we're talking about what people are currently reading. So I'm in the middle of a Dick Francis mystery novel, and he's someone that I think I discovered through the Jefferson Madison book sale, where at some point in one of the, you know, I'm wandering around looking for, and again, for those who don't know, let's not assume everybody knows, mm-hmm. Twice a year, April and November, mm-hmm. right? Jefferson Madison Regional Library does its own sort of fun drive. Mm-hmm. Who wants to talk about that for a minute?
Well, go ahead, Lindsay.
The Friends of the Library actually organize, sponsor, and run the book sale. Not the library per se, but the money the Friends raise goes to library programming, so we're very grateful to it. And you're right, it is twice a year now. It raises an incredible amount of money, and you can find such great books at it. The donations we get are wonderful, and they pour in all year round. Some of the books in the book sale are things that we've withdrawn from the library, but the vast majority, I think, are donations from the public. And that's where you can find Dick Francis and hundreds of other mystery writers.
Right. I mean, that's how my system works, is I read it and I keep it, or I read it and I give it out to someone who has to do one of the following, keep it, or give it to the library system. So I'm one of the people who are constantly bringing boxes and bags of books to Northside. But I found a Dick Francis novel, and I'm looking for something to read, and I go, Dick Francis, I've heard his name, and he writes sports? I don't know, let's pick one up. And so for $1 or $2, I buy, I think, two Dick Francis novels, and I realized that I've stumbled across this writer, and again, he's British, to go back to Sandy's earlier comment. And for someone who can write 30 books, approximately, and while they all have a British and a equine, horse-related concept to them, you do not need to be British, you do not need to know a lot about horses, and none of the stories are the same. He is not this concept of, to make fun of other writers, someone who does A is for something and B is for something else. And that is all because of the book sale. So thanks to the friends of the library system.
That's great. It's always great when you find an author who you love who already has a backlog that you can go back into. The most frustrating thing is when you get a first or a second novel that you absolutely adore, and then you have to wait for them to come out with something else. You can't just go back and say, oh, yes, it's all there for you.
Well, and also at Daedalus, I have special love in my heart for Sandy's store, because at some point 20 years ago, I was in there and stumbling down the stairs where, for those who haven't been, there's bookshelves in every floor to ceiling, every wall, down the stairwells, and I stumbled across my first Kurt Vonnegut book. So thanks to Sandy McAdams for having such an incredible variety. And granted, Kurt Vonnegut is not, I mean, you can find that in every place, but not everybody brings you in with such interest as you can find. So again, our guest today, Sandy McAdams, he owns Daedalus Bookshop, corner of Market and 4th Street in downtown Charlottesville. Meredith Dickens is the collection manager for the Jefferson Madison Regional Library. Lindsay Idison, Northside branch manager. Sandy, I'm always fascinated. I didn't bring it with me, but you have this wonderful list of books. Again, the title, Books That Should Not Be Forgotten, But...
Not necessarily recommended.
How do you come up with that title of your listing?
I came up with it because many years ago when I was an undergraduate in Manhattan, I used to go to a guy's bookstore. His name was Joe Kling, and he had a used bookstore right by where the Women's House of Detention used to be, I think on Greenwich. It's gone now, and I'm sure this bookstore is gone. He didn't have such a hot bookstore, but he was a fascinating guy. And every day I would go in there as a snotty undergraduate, thinking I'd read everything. He would say, Sandy, have you read? And he'd say, some title I have never, ever heard of. Not read, but never heard of. And they were always wonderful. And so I decided probably 3 or 4 years ago that I should make a list, somewhat like Joe Kling made a list for me, of books that you may or may not know, but you should at least have a look into. Stern's book, Tristram Shandy, that is not a book that you're going to sit down and read and read right through, but it's a book you can dip into. The only guy I ever heard who read it completely through in sections was a guy who used to teach here in Charlottesville at St. Anne's. He's gone on to other jobs now, but a fascinating guy. And he said he was dating a woman who was now the president, I think, of Oberlin. But he said when they would make love, after they finished making love, they would sit down and read Tristram Shandy. He would read Tristram Shandy to her. And if you know the book at all, do you think this has got to be a first in the whole world? He had a use, and she loved the book, and he loved the book. But the books I have down are things like that, but also very obvious things that I think we should just remember. And on the list, I can't even remember now. It's now... The head librarian was kind enough to publish the list on their website, I think. Is that right?
And as a handout also in the library branches. Mm-hmm.
So you can go there and see it. And a lot of books you'll recognize, some books you have read. But other books I hope you haven't read. There's one called Journal of a Disappointed Man.
Who's been reading my diary?
See, that, right. And so no one's heard of the book, but it's quite wonderful, and you shall not miss it. That's what the list is for.
So why would you not want to forget a book, but yet not recommend it?
Because there are books on there that I might not have enjoyed as much as I thought I would. And so I don't recommend it wholeheartedly. My list of wholehearted books changes all the time. There's a book called A Month in the Country.
I love that book.
Which is an astounding book. It's on the list, as a matter of fact. But I've never met anyone who didn't like the book. And do I think it's the masterpiece of the century? No. But it's a wonderful, wonderful book. And I've recommended it to book club people who are reading fact books about people in Pakistan. And I said, try to get away from that. Read A Month in the Country. And they always did with great success.
11:21 here on the Wake Up Call. We will put up the podcast. I'm going to go back through the hour and write down a lot of the books that we're talking about and recommended so that when you go through the podcast, you can find them in easy text, skimming it, like Sandy was saying. Sometimes you just have to skim it to get what you need out of it. So if you don't have your pen and paper handy and trying to write down, what did he say? What was the title of that again? We'll provide it in the podcast for you. Again, our guests, Sandy McAdams, Meredith Dickens, Lindsay Idison, here on the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call as we talk about books and reading.
Support today for WNRN comes from
Science Museum of Virginia and the immersive theater experience The Dome, showing giant screen films and cosmic expeditions. Also open Boost, an interactive approach to human physiology and the science of staying healthy. For information, smv.org.
Modlin Center for the Arts at the University of Richmond, presenting music, theater, dance, and visual arts. 2014-2015 season is coming in June. Details are at modlin.richmond.edu or Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, LinkedIn, Instagram, and YouTube.
This is your Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on WNRN, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you so much for being with us today here on WNRN Community Independent Radio. We're talking about books. Sandy McAdams, he's the owner of Daedalus Bookshop, corner of Market and 4th Street in the downtown Charlottesville area. Lindsay Idison, Northside Branch Manager for the Jefferson Madison Regional Library System. Meredith Dickens, a collection manager for Jefferson Madison. So, recommendations. Again, we go back to the summer reading thing, and maybe it's not summer reading, but something that you should write down and go pick up. Lindsay?
All right. Thank you, Rick. I would like to recommend a couple novels to people for this summer or any other good time to read. One of the books I enjoyed a lot last year was Me Before You by JoJo Moyes, an English writer. She also wrote another good book called The Girl You Left Behind. Recently, I read and was very impressed by an historical fiction book called A Burnable Book by Bruce Holsinger, who's a professor at the university. And it is historical fiction, takes place in the 14th century. Chaucer is a character, but it has a mystery at the heart of it. So anyone who likes historical fiction or a good mystery, I think, would be entertained by it. And the third book I'd like to recommend is The Storied Life of A.J. Fickrey, which is about a bookstore owner. And it's by Gabrielle Zevin.
Who wants to go next? Sandy, do you have anything on your list?
I really can't say. I just say read a book no matter what. Don't read those e-things. Get an actual book that you can put in your hand.
Well, that's a question I have later in the hour. We already know your answer to that. So when somebody comes in, and not for suggested reading, which I think is something that the library folks do, but if somebody comes into your bookshop, I walk in and say, I don't know what to read next. Are you going to ask me, what did you read last? Or are you just going to point me, Go to the go down to the basement and go to the take the third left.
I mean, that's the very idea of used bookstores as compared to buying a book on the internet. If you can point someone to a section they admire or like or think they'll like, then they can go in there and start to see books that they've never heard of but might appeal to them. And that's the very idea. It's like going into the stacks of a library. You find many books that you never heard of, but you might like to do. So we think we're a library for sale. And if you get into the mystery section or you get into the fiction section or the science fiction or the philosophy, and we certainly have sections that are more, that we sell more books from than others, and we certainly have writers that we sell more books than other writers. It's those people are probably not on my list, but they should be noted anyway.
And, you know, I'm sitting here, and Meredith, you're next to tell me, you know, suggestions, but Sandy, I want to make sure that Amanda and David get their props from working at Daedalus as well.
Oh, right.
Well, it's a fascinating place to go, and for the bookshop owner to have a good sense of, it's like somebody looking at your desk and going, what a mess. But you can pull out the paper that you want. You know that it's under the stack at the top left-hand central area and about halfway down. But to go into that bookshop of yours and have two other people who can also go, well, yeah, down there, over there, no, up, go up one shelf, I find that to be amazing. And I think that those two folks need to...
Well, they have gone off first to Cuba. And I mean, Amanda and her boyfriend have gone off to Cuba and then to Spain and back to Pittsburgh, I think. And there's a man there now, Peter Mano, who's just brilliant and has a huge background in books. In fact, he has maybe not quite my obsession, but damn close to it. And he's very knowledgeable and a nice, nice man. I think you'll find him very informative. I think what amazes me the most is, particularly in fiction, there are certain writers that you want to get because everyone loves them. Kurt Vonnegut, it's almost impossible to keep Kurt Vonnegut in our shop because he sells so quickly. Charles Bukowski is another one. I don't know if you've ever read a Charles Bukowski book, but it's really not top of, what shall I say? If you read one, you've read most of them, and he has a lot. In fact, before he died, shortly before he died, he said to his publisher, this is not right. You're going to be very, very rich from my books, and I'll be dead. And what's fair about that? And there are other writers like that that we simply can't keep in the shop.
11:28 on the wake-up call, Sandy McAdams, owner of Daedalus Bookshop, talking about... how that functions sometimes. Meredith, so we were talking about suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
Sandy says just pick up a book. Lindsay has some specifics. How about yourself?
Rather than specifics, I'll go a little bit with Sandy on this one. But touching on some other things that we've said already is that maybe pick up an older book or something that it's very easy to open up People or the New York Times Book Review and find a new title that everyone's going to be talking about. But if you want to have something really interesting to talk about at your next dinner party, pick up something that maybe not everybody is reading. Go back in time a little bit, or a first novel from a famous author, and you'll find something interesting. That's one of the things that, you know, as we look in the library collections, there are books, and I'm sure in the used bookstore too, that we know are fantastic, and they've just fallen off the radar, and they're just waiting for someone to find them again.
How do you... at the library, how does it work? You know, I ask, you know, I walk into Sandy's shop and ask, I don't know what to read next. How does that work at the at Jefferson Madison Regional Library System?
Pretty much the same way.
And Lindsay, you mentioned that the people have to read 30 books throughout the year, or minimum of 30 books of the kids' books.
Right. Children's and young adult. But they can read any adult books they care to.
at our information desk, patrons come up a lot and ask for guidance. They say, I really like, and they name an author or two, what else do you have that I might like? Or, I just don't know what to read next. Or, I really like Dick Francis. So we have a lot of backstock, and we have different staff members who have not expertise, but read different kinds of things. So if it's a mystery, they always come to me. We also have a lot of book lists that are out for patrons to pick up. And we prepare them so that if people don't want to ask us, because sometimes people are shy, we have lists posted that you can go and grab and then say, oh, well, let me look for some of the books. And they're usually annotated, so it tells you a little bit about the book. Plus, we do displays of books, so people can just pick from the display.
And if you can't make it into the library, we also are starting services this summer. One is What Do I Read Next?, where there's a website where you can fill in a form, maybe the last three books that you enjoyed, and the library staff will send you back some suggestions of what to read next. And then on Facebook, on Friday afternoons, they're going to do a similar thing where you can log in. This is what I just finished reading and I really liked. What should I read next? And library staff will be on hand to give you a personalized recommendation. So,
geez, that's great.
Now, I don't want to be starting a bad trend, but when I've dropped off books at Northside to add to the next upcoming book sale, sometimes I'll see that there's already a bunch of books there, and I'm like, oh, I wish I could just trade and take that one out with me. Not allowed.
You know, the good thing is that generally if you're there when the Friends of the Library staff is there, Bill or Andrew, you could probably talk to them about saying, you know, this one looks good, and they might price it there for you right there. Again, we don't want to start a trend, and I don't want to speak for them. But you're doing a good thing by bringing the donations anyway. We'll just say that.
Yeah. All right. 11:31 here on the Wake Up Call, talking about books. Sandy, you said you don't like the electronic books. Bad. And granted, you know, the bookshop isn't open. You don't sell used electronic copies. Do you own any sort of electronic device that would allow you to read one on the plane or, you know, somewhere where it's more convenient to have less weight and dimension that you're carrying with you?
It would never occur to me. I also send letters and I mail books to people that I think of, and I mail them a book to remind them I'm thinking of them. But on the other hand, I've never sent an email. So I'm in that category, both because it doesn't occur to me to do anything like that, and I guess also from a philosophical point of view, saying I'd like the old ways. Maybe it's just because I'm old. But they do appeal to me, and I love getting a thank you note in the form of a letter. It means so much more to me than if someone sends an email to my wife and says, good job, Sandy.
But your wife has an email.
Yes, and she's very good with it.
Do you give her, like, evil glares when she sits at the computer?
Not at all. Uh-huh. Not at all. She's
so you can't give Meredith and Lindsay an evil glare if they happen to have an electronic device. Let's make that clear.
Oh, not at all. Not at all.
Do either one of you, I mean, is there a preference? I would assume that all of us in the room would prefer the physical paper book.
Well, sure. We're book people, so probably that's a safe assumption. But I do have to say I own a tablet, and a couple summers ago, I was traveling overseas, and I wanted to read the latest Neal Stephenson novel, which was 1,000 pages, and I did not want to take the brick of the book along with me on the plane. So I read it on the tablet. I don't think it was the same. It's not the same experience. But we have a lot of people who, you know, who do read both. I think the Pew did a study recently, and they came up with most e-reader or people who use e-readers also still buy books. It's not an exclusive thing, but it is a different experience. And I think that with an aging population, e-readers are convenient. You can increase text size. You can have the text read out to you. So there is ways in which the technology is a good thing. It's not the same as reading a paper book, but I think it's a valid option.
Lindsay, do you have an electronic device for reading books?
I don't have one. I'm still a book person, but I have to say our patrons love Overdrive, which is the part of our website that has a downloadable catalog. And I don't think a day goes by that someone does not come into Northside asking for help learning how to download from OverDrive on their ebook, tablet, or whatever device they have.
Mm-hmm. How do you get a, you know, I have a nephew who's 10. And despite the fact that everyone else in my family, parents, sisters, myself, all love to read. You go to someone's home and there are books everywhere. He's not that into it. How do you get, or how do you interest a young child in reading?
I'll give you a dollar if you finish this book.
And then you have a quiz afterwards to make sure that you just weren't cheated out of a dollar?
Absolutely.
I think you have to work hard on finding the right book for that child. I suggest a lot of times that parents start out with a selection of things that we help them pick out they think will, and then they read them together. Because I think if you can hook the child into the plot, they would continue reading the book.
I have this lovely picture of, for those who listen regularly, know that I absolutely adore my dog, Lazarus. And there's this lovely picture of this nephew that I'm talking about reading Go Dog Go to Lazarus at a family gathering. But that's really one of the few times that he will read. Mm-hmm. And so I'm, you know, curious as to how, if you have two kids in the family and one of them wants to go to the library and pick out a book and the other one is sort of feels like they're being dragged along, you know, how you bring that together.
I think part of it too is, and maybe two things. One, there were some people, we had house guests last night, and they sat down with their kids before bedtime. And they have a boy and a girl, and they each read separate books to the kids. And the kids were sitting in their lap, and the kids, as they listened to books, fell asleep. Now, to me, that's a guarantee they're going to read books their whole life. I mean, it was beautiful. And then if you have an older person, let's say 12, I can remember when my daughter Rebecca was reading Stephen King. Now, I was trying to push Marjorie Kennan Rawlings, The Yearling, on her, but she was having none of that. But she read Stephen King endlessly, every book a couple of times. And I can remember talking to her with a group of people and hear her using words that I had no idea she knew at the age of 12. And it was all because of Stephen King. And she now is and still a crazy reader and can read a book in a day and just loves them and gobbles them up. And that's she did on her own.
Yeah, I think that's the key, is not to force any specific book, but they will find, you know, whatever they're reading encourage just the act of it. It can be the same ridiculous, what we think is ridiculously simple chapter series book that's the same book over and over again, but they are getting into the habit of sitting down with a book and focusing on it and whatever they enjoy.
Whatever they enjoy is the key. You know, whether it's Nancy Drew and you have to read every single Nancy Drew, as I did growing up. But I'm not reading Nancy Drew today. You know, you do move on. But if what it takes for them to love to read is whatever it takes. And it has to be all of the Babysitter Club, Nancy Drew, Hardy Boys, or whatever series fiction is popular, then that should be it. You shouldn't be a literary snob with your child.
Yeah.
Now, how about I am reading the Nancy Drew books still because I'm always looking, every time I go to the book sale, I'm always looking to fill in the holes of the ones that I don't have. And Sandy, do you have any of the Nancy Drews? I'm not talking about the 1987 in chintzy paperback. I'm talking about not necessarily the first copy from 1938 either, but can I go there and flesh out my numbered series?
We have three sections of kids' books. The one section we call Throw in the Tub, and those are just regular books they can read and do whatever they'd like with. Then there's a section of older kids' books that mostly adults buy. And there's a third section of series books, and they range from the Motor Boys up to Nancy Drew. And we get them, and people love them. I think less and less, I hate to say, because they're reading things like the Babysitter Club.
I think the Babysitter Club has had its day. right now they love the fairies books.
Well, and that's, a question is, Sandy, you're talking about a 12-year-old and younger reading Stephen King, and now the fairy series, which makes me think of the vampires. And is there, how do you determine that a 12-year-old should or should not be reading Stephen King because of the storyline, the gore, the language, versus the fact that there's witchcraft and other books? How does a parent or someone in the family who's considering giving a book determine what's appropriate and what's not?
One of the first places that I and my colleagues turn to is a website called commonsensemedia.org. It's a nonprofit, and they rate movies, books, music, and they have all the different ways in which you could be sensitive. You know, some parents are okay with their kids reading a little, or having language. They just don't want to read, you know, have graphic sex or the violence. Each family has its own sensitivities. And the good thing about this website is it lists violence, sexual content, language, consumerism, positive issues. And it sort of tells you what might be in that book or movie that might be a touch point you want to talk to your kids about. And that's a good resource.
And the other thing is,
it's commonsensemedia.org.
Okay. Lindsay?
I was going to say, the parents are the ultimate gatekeepers. We can suggest books. We can tell them a little bit about the books. But it's really up to the parent to decide whether the book is appropriate for their family. It's not the library's job to do that for them. We just have the books.
11:41 here on the Wake Up Call. Take a quick break. Sandy McAdams, Lindsay Idison, Meredith Dickens, as we talk about books. Come back. I want to talk about how the library system selects its books.
Our members are joined by the following underwriters in their support of WNRN.
The Markets of Tiger Fuel Company, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street.
McGrady's Irish Pub on Grady Avenue, a veteran-owned sports pub under new ownership and management. McGrady's new menu holds a variety of loaded baked potatoes and Blarney Stone steaks. McGrady's supports local charities, hosts trivia on Tuesdays and ladies' night on Wednesdays, and is dedicated to getting everyone a safe ride home. McGrady'sIrishPub.com.
Maudlin Center for the Arts at the University of Richmond, presenting music, theater, dance, and visual arts. 2014-2015 season is coming in June. Details are at maudlin.richmond.edu or Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, LinkedIn, Instagram, and YouTube.
Hi, I'm Paul Fleischer from the Richmond Peace Education Center. On Sunday, June 22nd, we present folk singer John McCutcheon at the Maggie Walker Governor's School Auditorium at 1000 North Lombardy Street. McCutcheon will include a tribute to Pete Seeger while also drawing on his vast catalog of more than 30 albums. All proceeds from this concert benefit the Richmond Peace Education Center, which has been a leading voice for nonviolence in the Richmond community for more than three decades. Through programs on conflict resolution and violence prevention, racial reconciliation, and global issues, the center is making a difference in the region. For more details and tickets, rpec.org. I'm Paul Fleischer, making a community connection on WNRN.
Make your community connection with WNRN. Email connection at WNRN.org with your nonprofit event or organization's information. Independent Music Radio, WNRN.
This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you so much for being with us today here on WNRN. I'm Rick Moore. Our guest today, Meredith Dickens. She's the collection manager at the Jefferson Madison Regional Library. Sandy McAdams, he's the owner of Daedalus Bookshop, downtown Charlottesville, corner of Market and 4th Street. And Lindsay Idison, she's the Northside Branch Manager for the local Jefferson Madison system. So Sandy had a great question, which is, how does the library determine what to buy?
That's a good question. And I probably should know the answer to that. It is hard. We were just talking about the volume of material being published today, both traditionally and self-published, and we can't buy everything, and we can't retain everything. If you think about every title published, even the good ones, we only have a certain amount of physical space. So we buy what the population needs and wants. We go by circulation numbers in terms of topics and subjects and authors who have, you know, if they're checking out those books, they're going to keep checking out the books. That means they're using them and needing them. So I'll buy more of that kind of book. We read reviews. We watch the news. If it's a topical subject, if it's something like there was a major book on fracking last year, and that's a topic that everyone's talking about. So we're going to get stuff that relates to today. We also want to make sure that we keep certain of the classics so that we have an educated populace. And if somebody does look at your list and say, oh yes, I do want to read Tristram Shandy, we're going to have that in the library too. And as older copies get worn out, we will buy as much as we can newer copies to replace them. So it's a little bit of old, a little bit of new. And we also have a great system for patron suggestions. So if I miss a review of a book that's coming out and somebody else, you know, hears an author interviewed on the radio, they'll write a patron suggestion for purchase, and we'll look at all of those books and say, oh yeah, somebody in the community wants to read this book. We'll make sure that it gets onto the library shelf.
So we were talking about donations to the Jefferson Madison system. Mm-hmm. So I take in my books, and it just so happens that someone goes through and says, oh, this particular book would be a great addition. For whatever reason, I'm going to pull this out and keep this into the Jefferson Madison book system. Has something else been taken out? Are there only room for 1 million books, and by adding mine in, something else gets lost?
Not necessarily. As you mentioned, if we have to get a newer copy, it might replace a worn out copy. Or books do go through cycles of life. There are certain times when there's a whole bunch of fiction. It was popular in the 70s and 80s, and people just aren't reading it anymore. It's available. We can always get an older title through interlibrary loan, or something's been digitized so we can get it online, and we can make room for newer or more popular titles by deaccessioning those.
Sandy, I was, again, Sandy McAdams, owner of Daedalus Books. I've mentioned several times how fascinating I find your bookshop. For those of you who haven't been, please take a moment, go down there and check it out. I won't say that it's for everyone, but it's for important, I think, for many. I saw an interview with you recently where you used the word wonderment, the wonderment of books. Can you explain that? Because it seemed important to you, so I want others to share in that.
I think particularly in that interview, I was trying to suggest two areas of wonderment. The wonderment of wonderful prose, which I mentioned before, that I found both in Lawrence Durrell and in John le Carré, that just so lusciously good at it. And the wonderment of the object itself. I collect lots of books that I will never read just because I like the way they are. I collect Penguin books published in the 40s, 50s, etc., just because they're so beautifully done. And they're also divided into colors for their sections in a very innocent way. And I collect Dent books published by Dent. And the Brits put out lots of bizarre series of books. And I love those too. The Traveler's Library. You never know what's going to be in it. And they're so eccentric that it's lovely to find these things. There's a series called Tauchnitz that very few people remember because they're long out of circulation. But in every railroad station in Europe from about 1860, maybe through 1950 or 60, they had Tauchnitz paperbacks. And this guy Tauchnitz published books. He gave no royalties. There was nothing. He just saw a book he liked. He would publish it. He had 4,000 titles. And you could go up and pick up a book by John O'Hara. And how did he get the rights to this? Well, he didn't. He just published it. But it, you can imagine what it did for the reading public.
Probably got away with that a little more at during that era than
he might
today.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
And see, more so some of the facts that you've stopped accumulating, but you're still sharing which ones you have.
Yes, I can't help that.
I want to talk for a minute about, do you read different genres during different seasons? Do you read, and we've talked about this before, about how when you talk about summer books, summer reading sometimes, and I don't remember whether it was Lindsay or Meredith who made the assembly of summer blockbuster movies, and sometimes they're just simpler and they get more press release than other books. Do you read different genres during different seasons when it's cold? Are you going more in-depth literature and reading the easy stuff during the summer?
I can see that going both ways. If, you know, if I'm taking a vacation in the summer, I'm going to be at the beach or something, I might be interrupted a lot, so I want something I can dip into and out of, short chapters or just a nice light plot that I won't have to, you know, really seriously sink my teeth into. Whereas, as you said, cozying up in a winter, you know, you can spend a nice hour getting really deep into something more serious. But at the same time, if you are traveling in the summer and you're on vacation, maybe you have the time that you wouldn't the rest of the year to actually get into something that you would be distracted by in your everyday life, or get, you know, a different kind of thing than your everyday life. So I can see it going both ways.
I think I've seen, I can remember in the 60s, being in Provincetown and watching my hippie friends bring the first volume of Proust's Remembrance of Things Past, translated by Scott Moncrief, I think. And every year they would bring the first volume, thinking, this summer I'll be on the beach with the kids. I know I'll finish at least the first volume. And it never happened. And just what you say, they thought they were going to have the time, but they needed to bring something different. Maybe the Babysitter's Club.
I'm a big fan of... if you want to read something that you don't know the length of time, I'm a big fan of short stories. I find that I give great awe to those who are good short story writers. I find that to be very difficult to bring you in, set up what you want, and then finish what I consider to be appropriately, where I don't leave feeling unsated by your story. And there's different kinds. There's obviously fiction short stories. But one of my favorite short story novelists, if that's the right word for him, is David Sedaris. And I discovered him on one of these summer beach trips because I, you know, there was a plan to do something here, or we were going to be caught up in a family gathering there, etc. And for those who've never read David Sedaris, I find that to be the most funny family sort of, what's the proper word that I want, where he sort of tells true life, exaggerated fiction. And I'm, maybe it's not exaggerated, but I find it to be, it's so funny, it must be somewhat exaggerated. But I find him, are there other short story novelists that you might recommend?
There are a lot of comedians doing the, you know, short humor pieces. BJ Novak has one out this year, and I have the title here. Hold on.
As the collections manager, and it's out this year.
It's called One More Thing. BJ Novak was an actor. He's a writer for The Office and an actor. You might, if you did watch The Office, he was the intern. But he was also behind the scenes and a great comedian. He's a lot of great comedian friends, which I bring up because the audiobook version of his collection, One More Thing, has a lot of his celebrity friends as guest appearances in the reading these short, humorous pieces. So I found that one amusing.
Anyone else with a short story collection? Or
I think there are certain people that are just masters at the form. One is a guy who, it's one of the reasons I hate World War I so much. It killed so many wonderful Englishmen, let alone Americans and French, but one in particular was a guy named Saki. and you find them in a bookstore in a library under H.H. Monroe. But he used sake. And they were the most wonderful, amusing, touching stories. And then another one, forget Hemingway's novels. They were just for fun. Read his short stories, and you see someone who has the form as though it came from down from heaven. He's just got it cold. There's one particularly called A Clean, Well-Lighted Place, or The Short, Happy Life of Francis McComber, that just, you'll give up your job, just stay on the beach reading.
Lindsay, do you like short stories?
I like some of them. I actually like the short humorous pieces that Meredith was referring to. And, of course, there's many collections. Dave Barry has many. But I think that some of the memoirs, especially Tina Fey's Bossy Pants and Let's Pretend This Never Happened by Jenny Lawson, are funny memoirs that would make great light reading, and you could read them in little spurts. And Let's Pretend This Never Happened, I think she's a blogess is her self-title, was so funny I was laughing until I was crying when I was reading it.
I don't remember what had me laughing so hard just recently. Books and reading, our guests, Meredith Dickens, Lindsay Idison, Sandy McAdams, we have about 4 minutes left. And we talked about things that, suggestions that you'd like to make. Is there anything that you're expectantly awaiting? We mentioned earlier about the series. If you get into someone who their first book or an early book in the series, and you, oh please, why does it take a year for you to publish the next piece?
I am waiting the next mystery by Tana French, who writes a Dublin murder squad mysteries, In the Woods, Faithful Place, etc. And her next one is coming out in the fall. I'm sure Meredith will order it.
Oh, yes, definitely. And I'm also waiting for one in the fall. David Mitchell has a novel. I think it's called The Bone Clock or something like that. He wrote Cloud Atlas, which was made into movies. A lot of people refound it recently. But he's one of my favorite authors, and I'm really hoping I'm not disappointed by this new one.
Sandy, as someone who may not be waiting for the next book, you talk about you don't really read that much anymore as go through them. Is there a book or a series that you're... Gosh, I wish somebody would bring that in the box next time they come in.
I guess I'm waiting for Michael Ondaatje's next book. I like him so much that anything he writes, I want to read. I had a problem with him. I broke my cardinal rule of completely divorcing authors from their books. I think whatever the author is doing, I don't care. Good or bad, I don't care. I just want the book. But by chance, he was here at a book festival, and I said almost humorously to one of the workers that I'd love to take Michael Ondaatje to dinner. And 2 days later, they called up and said, yeah, I'd love to come to dinner. And he brought 4 other people, and for $380 at the C&O, it was a wonderful dinner, but one of the most boring, stupid dinners I ever went to. But that was a number of years ago, and I'm slowly getting away from it. And I will never even speak to an author again, let alone take him to dinner.
I'm waiting for a book that in a series that Meredith has ruined my life by turning me onto young adult fiction and all these series. And you can probably do a better job of describing the text. But it's Scarlet and Winter. Winter is the upcoming one. The series where the characters are sort of based on
classic fairy tales.
Classic fairy tales.
Yeah. Started with Cinder.
Cinder was the first one.
Yeah,
yes.
And she's a cyborg. So that tells you.
Right,
it's
her leg.
Yeah.
I don't want to give away too much.
No,
but
she has continued with really good. Each one is as good as the other, I think.
So do you remember there's Cinder was the first one, and I believe Scarlet is the second one.
Yeah, and then the third one is based on Rapunzel.
Which I think that one is called Cress.
Cress,
C-R-E-S-S.
Yeah.
So, is there a name of the series?
I don't think it, when you pick it up, it doesn't say like something
Maunder?
Number one.
Meyer.
Marissa Meyer.
Yeah.
It doesn't list it as a series by title.
Right. It's not like the X Chronicles or something.
But it is designed to be a 4-book series, or at least that's what it is now. They say the final book will be Winter, which I believe comes out in early 2015. So I'm sitting here twiddling my thumbs. I think I've reread all the other books twice.
Well, I've got something else for you to start on while you're waiting. So
yeah. So 11:59 here on the Wake Up Call. Thank you so much to everybody for coming in today. I will record the podcast, put the podcast up, and we'll take a listing of many of the books that were mentioned here. Anything on the, as we fly out of here, any book you popped into mind that you want to make sure somebody reads?
Nope. Thank you for having a program that talks about books.
And come visit the library this summer.
There you go. And find out the calendar dates for the book sale in November. Everyone have a great day.
Rick, thank you.
This has been your Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on WNRN. The Wake Up Call is supported by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Brandon Wong and Max Cecilia Struther. Tune in next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.